Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Welcome to Let's Get Busy, a weekly podcast where I talk shop and get down to business with authors, illustrators, kid lit notables, and everyone in between. I'm Matthew Winner, an elementary school librarian, author of the Busy Librarian blog, and your host. This is episode number 139 with Joyce Wan, author-illustrator of The Whale in My Swimming Pool, published by Farrar, Straus, and Giroux. Joyce has a way with, in her words, quote, cute, chubby, and adorable images, and thank goodness for it. The Japanese pop culture ingrained in her aesthetic has a certain undeniable joy that matches and celebrates the tone of her stories perfectly. And I have a good feeling that listening to this conversation is going to make you adore her work even more. And after you listen, be sure to visit wanart.com. That's WANART.com. That's Joyce's company, where all of her greeting cards and stationery and a whole bunch of super awesome things with her super adorable art on it live and can be purchased and sent to others in the world to spread the joy of, well, the joy of Joyce. There, I said it. If you like what you hear, I encourage you to download other episodes of Let's Get Busy on your computer or handheld device through your preferred podcast host or by visiting the Let's Get Busy homepage directly. Rating the podcast through stars or reviews on iTunes actually helps the podcast reach a greater audience, which also translates to iTunes recommending Let's Get Busy to other listeners, which is a very good thing. Definitely do that if you want to help bring these chats to even more ears. And on that note, it's time to start episode number 139 of the podcast with Joyce Wan. Let's get busy. To the Let's Get Busy podcast, Joyce Wan. I'm excited to talk to you tonight.
Thanks for having me, Matthew.
Hey, Joyce, guess what? I forgot to tell you this before we started recording. You are my first official recording since the birth of our baby girl.
Yay!
That also means she might make an appearance on this recording.
Oh, my gosh. That would be so exciting for me and for your listeners.
She is eating just a couple feet from us, so we'll see if that happens. I should have mentioned that ahead of time, but there it is. Joyce, I'm excited that you're on because of how much I've fallen for your work through being friends with you on Facebook, because you share a lot of good stuff on there, but also just through your WanArt site. You make really cool, like, I never know the word to say it, but like really cool graphic images that I feel like if I go out in the wild and look, I probably see you everywhere on greeting cards and t-shirts and on books and on this and on that. You've just got that style that feels like it transcends everyone's interest and everyone just kind of wants your art around. Oh, I just love that about you.
Thank you. Yeah, it's so wonderful just to be able to be surrounded by cute, chubby, adorable images all the time.
Cute, chubby, adorable images.
Yeah,
there's your quote.
Like, I always tell people in my perfect world, everything would just be cute and chubby and round and everything.
Why? Have you always like drawn that way? I like that. So like, I grew up drawing Ninja Turtles and Transformers, right? And now as an adult, I still kind of draw that way. Maybe because I'm drawn to the like action figure
feel of creating? Is this something like you've always kind of had an affection for, the cute, round, adorable, chubby things?
I think so. You know what? And some of my art, I'm very much inspired, I'm sure you can tell, by Japanese pop culture. I grew up in the 80s. I'm Asian. And so I grew up with a lot of, you know, surrounded by things like Hello Kitty.
Yeah, I was just going to say the Japanese pop culture right away, that pops into Hello Kitty.
Yeah, and I love that stuff when I was younger.
Did you have what are the Tamagotchi pets?
I did.
We're about the same age. I'm aware of that.
And I was just obsessed with all that cute stuff. I feel like if I went to Japan, I would probably never come back. I've never been there, but I feel like it's ingrained in me, in my, you know, aesthetic. It's stuff I love. It takes me back to childhood, and I still love it as an adult. So I think that's why sometimes people have told me that my art, like, it appeals to both children and adults. And I can see that because I still love that stuff. So,
yeah, I could totally see that it would I could see it. What am I even saying? It does appeal to adults. It appeals to me. Of course it appeals to adults. And that the pop culture thing, the Japanese pop culture, yeah, that thick line, in addition to the chubby, adorable animals, it's that thick line that makes it feel like, that always made me feel like it was like a coloring book image that was just done in like a solid color. It just works really well. It looks like you could almost peel it off like a sticker on the page. I like that.
Yeah, it's the thick line, the really super clean and like precise.
Yeah.
Shapes and forms, and I just love that simplicity too, you know.
It's so it's just symmetrical, I guess is the word I'm saying too. When you design, are you drawing by this is such a non-artist thing for me to say, but are you like drawing by hand? Are you so good in your brain with shapes that you can just like hand draw all these perfect circle, oval, rounded shapes?
No, actually, I do still sketch by hand. That's the first step of my process. So I'm always sketching and doodling and simplifying too. Like sometimes you look at something and it looks really simple, but I don't know if people always realize it actually takes work to simplify something. Sometimes I have to draw a shape like several times until it's almost in its simplest form, and that sometimes is actually, you know, a challenge to break something down, an animal or into its simplest form.
I think that to make anything into those basic shapes, into the I mean, it's like minimalism, right? To use the fewest colors or shapes or lines possible is a discipline. It's not something that's easy. Well, you do it well, all adorable. Let's talk about, speaking of adorable, I want to talk to you about the whale in my swimming pool, because it's going to come out, I think, when this podcast releases, it's coming out. Do you mind giving just a book talk for the book?
Yeah, sure. So the book is about one sunny day, you know, little boy heads out for a swim and he's really excited. But his pool, is already taken, and it's one of those little wading pools, you know, the kind that we all remember when we were kids and we didn't have our own swimming pools. But there's a big whale in the water and it's just sitting right on top and it's not budging. And you know, the boy tries everything to get the whale out and nothing seems to work. You know, he plays fetch with it. He tries to play tag. He tries to negotiate with the whale. And, you know, he can't get it out. So, but, you know, luckily by the end, he comes up with the perfect solution. So, and I'm not going to give that away.
No. There's a great twist at the end that pays off so well, too. I love, Joyce, my favorite, I told you already that I love this book, and I was making vines of it, and I was just adoring it, and it's wonderful. But my favorite part of this book, just like stylistically, the way you approached it is that you've got kind of toward the beginning, the boy is closing his eyes. He's, I'm going to close my eyes and count to 10, hoping that when he opens his eyes, the whale will be gone.
Right.
And you're, the way I describe it is that you like zoom in on the boy's closed eyes. And when you flip the page and it's like a symmetrical picture of the whale just staring back that right. close to be, to have, when you, you know, you reading a book with a kid is an intimate moment, right? So when I have my son on my lap and we're reading this book and we're that close to the boy, it feels like we're closing our eyes together. Like we're almost like huddling our heads together and counting. And then to turn the page and have the whale in your face like that was just awesome.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I think that the size of the book really makes a really big impact. The whale is just so big. It's they end up doing like a 10 by 10 format for the book. And I think
I was gonna say it's pretty big.
That really helps to, you know, give you the actual impression of this big whale in your backyard. So,
well, yeah, especially cause you're showing, I mean, just from the cover, you're seeing that the boy is basically as big as my thumb on right. the cover of the book. And the whale, I can't even cover it with my hand. So just already the way that you're kind of showing your readers what a giant inconvenience this is to fit in your little pool, and how in the world are you going to get rid of it? I think it's wonderful. I love it.
I mean, I was actually inspired because I had read something about how there are sometimes whales that are as big as school buses, and that just totally fascinated me, you know? And
so you asked the natural question of what if one turned up in my swimming
pool? Yeah, what if one showed up all of a sudden?
Well, that kind of juxtaposition, I feel like is what over and over you see what works so well in children's books when you're able to, well, I guess you and I were talking about this before we started recording, but the way that writers seem to write the books that, however we said it, that you kind of get caught in that mental age, right? So you're writing for this like preschool age because that's where your stories are coming from. That's where maybe you first fell in love with drawing or with stories or whatever, and you're just kind of locked into that time. Well, to be able to, as an adult, think that way is really hard. When we force it, it's really bad when an adult fakes it and says, oh, I bet this would be a wonderful story to tell children. It just doesn't feel natural. So to be able to tap into something that feels like just out of reach. Okay, I like whales. Okay, I like swimming in my backyard. If we could just blend those two, that's you hit a real sweet spot, and it works really well. It works fantastic in your book.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I, you know, on the surface, the book is actually really silly. It's kind of a quirky story, and you can just read it for what it is. And you can decide for yourself whether the whale is actually really there or not, because I actually never really say, you know, in the book, and it's never explained how the whale even actually got there. But you know, when you want to look deeper into it, I kind of think that sometimes the book is about sometimes those big challenges or obstacles that we all face in our lives. And, you know, life doesn't always seem fair. And sometimes no matter what we do, you can't change your situation. But, you know, you can make the best of it, and or you can let it get the best of you. And so the boy, you know, makes the best of it.
Wow, that's taking it to another level. I was going to say, you're right. Sometimes we even metaphorically face whales in our swimming pool, and
right.
we have to figure out how we're going to face it. And that's something that a 4-year-old faces as well as a, you know, the 24-year-old or the parent of the kid. That's something that at every step in life we go through. But yeah, to even think that you're writing it on that level of like, what if the whale's not there the entire time? What if it's really imagined? Makes me think like, wait a second. Kids though that say that, don't they, Joyce? That there's kids that are going to be like, this didn't really happen. He was imagining it the whole time. Huh? And then there's going to be others that are like, this is a book. This whale totally exists in there.
Oh yeah, kids are so smart, you know. And they'll come up with you know, they'll think of things that you don't even think of sometimes. You know?
No doubt.
So, and yeah, sometimes I have read this book to kids, and like you said, some ask me if, you know, if the whale is actually really there. And I ask them the question right back, you know, I mean, you know, you can decide for yourself, you know?
Yeah. Cause that's the best answer, isn't it? That if I tell you, it could, in essence, it could ruin the entire experience you have with this book. Cause maybe the absolute joy you find in it is thinking that maybe it actually is real.
Right.
Yeah. That's good stuff. Because you've published several books at this point. When you, let me bounce around here because I know the answer to my question because I saw that you're on Kidlit TV soon or you've recorded or whatever, and I saw you making cupcakes.
Yes.
So I know that you do cool things to go along with your books. Also, I know that your stuff looks awesome. So are you an author that travels with like rub-on tattoos.
I always
like iron-on t-shirts. I feel like you would be choice. You would be the send away in the cereal box to get a whale in my swimming pool iron-on decal for your shirt.
Yeah, no. Anybody who knows me knows I always have stickers in my purse.
And you just carry them.
I just have stickers in my purse. Yeah, I just whip them out.
That's amazing. All right. Well, now those of you that are listening, if you didn't know that about Joyce,
yes,
hit her up at the grocery store for some stickers.
Ask me for a sticker.
I am totally going to keep that in mind in case we do ever. We don't live that far apart. I'm going to get some stickers. That's fun.
Yeah, and I'm doing a book launch actually for the book on April 11th actually, and hopefully this will air before then at Books of Wonder. So anybody who's listening and in the New York City area, you know, I'll be at Books of Wonder on April 11th from 3 to 5, and there'll be whale fun stuff galore. So,
oh, that's gonna be amazing. And also, if you're not in New York, it's a very short bus ride to get there. Oh, Books of Wonder, they do such fun events, too. Yay. You're going to have – and I know all of your friends, Joyce. Let's be honest.
Oh, yes.
You're going to have a great time at Books of Wonder with this book launch.
Yes.
Well, the other half, I guess, that I wanted to talk to you about, because I was reading your about page on your site, and this is awesome to me to know that – so I guess if I step back for a second, I don't often know about the work people do beyond writing or illustrating. But it's cool to find out that some other people have different things going. Like to find out, for example, that Ari Chung has Live in a Story that he's done. You know, he's taking the beautiful art from children's books and making these wall decals, right? So to see you have this other side where you are creating other things, that to me, I love one that you're sharing your art as wide as you are, but for me it also feels like another one of those levels where people can connect with children's books or connect with you or maybe even love the stationery and the gifts that you make and not even realize that, oh, this woman also makes awesome books. Who am I thinking? That Lizzie Boyd that does Flashlight and Outside Inside or Inside Outside that also does like these gorgeous paper designs.
Oh yeah.
I love that you do that, and I'd love to hear you tell that story about your first greeting card design because I thought that is amazing.
It's funny because when I was a child and that's why I think art programs in schools are just so important. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of them are getting cut. But when I was in first grade, we had a project to design a greeting card, and it was with like a collage and I think pieces of felt. And I designed a greeting card of a girl and a boy building a snowman. And that's totally from childhood. I mean, I grew up in Boston, so there were plenty of snowy winters, and we totally did that when we were kids. And I guess unbeknownst to me, our teacher submitted it to a contest sponsored by the Art Institute of Boston, and the winners of the contest would have their greeting cards actually mass produced and sold at a department store. At that time, it was a department store similar to Macy's, but it was not Macy's. It was Filene's, for those of your listeners who may be familiar with that. But and so I was one of three winners, and it went from like I think kindergarten age all the way to high school age, and I was
six.
Yes, I was six, and I got to go to the state house, and I got to meet the governor of Massachusetts at the time, who was Michael Dukakis, and it was just. I mean, it was like a dream, and my parents, I'm sure they were so proud. I think my mom still has the picture of me with Dukakis hanging up at the house.
Does she?
Yes.
That's amazing.
If anything, that experience was almost like it was a really huge boost, encouragement to me to continue on with art and just keep going with it. So, but I actually didn't think that, 20 years later, I didn't have dreams to create a greeting card company or like that wasn't going to be a thing, that I was going to do. I mean, I didn't even know if that was even possible, to be honest with you. And I grew up, my parents are actually immigrants from China. And, art wasn't, they encouraged it, but they didn't necessarily, they didn't discourage art, but, I don't think that even they knew, that a person could be an illustrator or an artist for a living. And, so I chose something practical, and I, basically studied architecture and, majored in architecture. And I was an architect for a few years before I realized that my true love was drawing and illustrating. And, I decided to basically, I think I had those memories of that, my early memories of winning that greeting card contest. And,
I could meet the governor. All I need to do is start a card company.
And so I just ended up I took some classes at the School of Visual Arts and decided to start my own greeting card company. And that's kind of how that started. And I still do. I sell, greeting cards to, online and to stores all over the country.
So that came first. The greeting card company came before writing for children.
Oh, yes. I actually got into children's books through the greeting cards, believe it or not. I was exhibiting at trade shows all over the country and basically met my first publisher at the New York International Gift Fair, where I had a booth.
Cool.
Yeah, I had a booth, and I was basically, exhibiting my products.
Retailers could buy it for their store.
Oh, yeah.
You understand that?
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. Yeah. I just haven't ever been.
Yeah, those kind of shows. Like I would exhibit at the National Stationery Fair and the New York International Gift Fair. I mean, I was doing fairs all over the country. And I met an art director. It was actually an art director from Blue Apple Books. And they said that they had seen my cards in stores before and that they even had some in their office and that it was funny that they met me here because, they were always interested in my art. And that's just how the first connection came about.
That's so cool. Blue Apple publishes a lot of great stuff, and for them to just be like,
"Hey,
oh yeah, we have your stuff on our wall. Let's make a book together."
Yeah, seriously. And literally 2 months after that, they invited me to come to their office, and then that resulted in my first book. Yeah, I always tell people, I always feel like I kind of slipped in the back door a little bit, into publishing. I had been at it, developed my own company for a good, 6 years or so before that happened, my greeting card company. So
that's one of my favorite phrases whenever I hear it come up in whatever different setting, not just publishing, but when you hear people say like, I was an overnight success after working for 26 years.
Yes.
So your first, and that was with Blue Apple, was Kiwi and Pear, right?
Yeah, greetings from Kiwi and Pear, correct.
Well, and in that way, too, you were telling stories through your art, right? I know that, especially when I've talked to the people that have done the portfolio showings at SCBWI, I know that, you know, you're pouring everything into a postcard or into a couple illustrations to try to convey a story. So that's something that, whether or not you went into publishing, you're telling stories through the art you're writing.
Oh, yeah, telling stories and also trying to illustrate emotions and, you know, all kinds of even universal themes are expressed in greeting cards, too. You know, celebrations and joy and appreciation and all these things that you think about why you buy a greeting card for someone, you're trying to express a sentiment. And so a lot of times, I think that's why I do think that a lot of times, there are a lot of children's book illustrators that came from the greeting card world, actually.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Well, I know Lori Keller.
Yeah, Mary Englebright did.
That's right, yeah.
And there's the girl that created the beautiful paper cut illustrations. And her name escapes me right now.
Well, that's all right, yeah. But still, it never ceases to amaze me, the different walks of life that bring people into publishing, and it ends up being that contributes to that voice that you have in the stories that you tell, and it's just cool. I mean, so it's one of the reasons that makes children's publishing so great is that there's so many different voices that are represented in books.
Totally, and you know, and it's another thing too, because people always. I always, you know, always say, you know, who want to get into publishing, you know, I never had formal art training, and although I do have art school envy a lot, but it's, you know, it's possible, you know, to. You just gotta really work hard, and there, you know, there's other ways around it. You know, there's wonderful organizations like SCWI, you know, which I ended up joining later on, and classes you can take, and it's wonderful. Every time I talk to someone who's in publishing, everybody seems to have come from such varied and, you know, different backgrounds.
Yeah, but it's, you know, one of the things that, training or not, what makes you a great artist is that you've continued to work at your craft. I mean, that's what, when you're talking to me, like at the top of the recording, when you're talking to me about working and working to get to the simplest, most refined design for a character, that's something that you work at. And whether you come from formal training or not, it's, you either have a skill or you don't. And you, Joyce, know what to refine down to. And that's a skill.
Oh, thank you.
Like, of course. Are you kidding me? Like your stuff. A lot of people like your stuff. We like your stuff. And I love that you've still got this company going that you I suppose that you're able to be – I'm sure you're incredibly busy with designing – working on books and then designing these other products. But what it makes me even feel like is that when you're doing design – and you could speak to this certainly, but – if you have a design that doesn't work for a book, it might fit for a card or for, you know, a set of magnets or stickers or something. Or it might be a way to play with characters until you see a story come out.
Oh, yes, totally. And a lot of my book ideas actually came from my greeting card designs, too. I mean, not only the greetings from Kiwi and Pear, but like even the You Are My Cupcake and We Belong Together, cool. all those books. They were inspired by greeting card lines that I have. Like, You Are My Cupcake came from this line of new baby cards that I had that I thought, wouldn't that be so cute if I had these little icons and, you know, food icons that we often call, you know, terms of endearment that we use. And that ended up, I thought that would make a really cool board book. So, and that's kind of how that idea came about.
I love that series that you have. I love You Are My Cupcake because it is those sweet phrases that we say, cutie pie, and I'm remembering, pumpkin. We use pumpkin a lot around the house. So there were a couple that I'm like, oh yeah, I love these. When you were designing this book, so you're saying you intended it all along to be a board book, right?
I did. Yeah.
So when you were submitting a manuscript to your publisher, I guess to your agent, right? You have an agent, I think.
I do. I do now. I'm represented by Teresa Kalinsky of Prospect Agency. Before that, actually, You Are My Cupcake, because since I didn't, when I, you know, when I created Greetings to Queen Pierre, I didn't have an agent at that time.
Oh, okay.
And I also didn't have one when I created the idea for You Are My Cupcake. I ended up actually basically joining SCWI, looking up, you know, doing my research, looking up all the publishers that might publish it, and actually literally submitting it myself. So, so You Are My Cupcake was essentially a slush pile line. I always tell people that because they think it's like so, such an amazing story. So,
I mean, because it's everyone hears rumors of the slush pile and how they do find publishers do look through all of those submissions in the slush pile, but. But it's also slush.
Right. It's like 3% or something. I don't know what it is that of books that actually get pulled out of slush that make it to publication.
Well, you know, though, yours makes it, though, because it's got this universal appeal. Because there's a sentimentality to it that's universal, that's what's special. But for me to know that – I guess I don't think have talked to someone on this podcast before about someone who has specifically created board books, and that is an audience – that needs high quality books, because my word, when you have a baby, people like to buy you books and they don't always go for quality. It's really important to have, gosh, I am having deja vu because I did talk about this to someone. I'll have to look it up, but about how with board books, a lot of the best selling board books are just republications of other books. Maybe I was talking to Sam Berger about it, but, because she had Crankenstein, because Samantha had Crankenstein just
into
a board book. But that often they whoever it was, now I'm thinking it's Chris Barton too, doesn't matter, whomever it was, it's one of you great illustrator, author people, one of you wonderful people. but that often you're seeing that the ones that are selling are parents that are buying books that they remember from when they were a kid. Your Goodnight Moon and Very Hungry Caterpillar, and those are all great. But there are some really good board books that are brand new, that are, you know, that they're wonderful. Like you. You're writing for our youngest.
Well, there was this rumor going around that standalone board books actually were not getting acquired because they don't do so well. You know, everybody does want to buy the classics and all those.
So is that true?
Picture books.
Because you're in that.
The funny thing is my career grew and mostly all in board books during that time. I mean, I honestly think that we're experiencing a renaissance in board books because I think that board books are so versatile. They're not only, you know, they're books, but they're gifts as well. And,
they've got those great board book stories where they have, I don't even remember what line is doing it, but where they're making board books essentially out of like Jane Eyre and out of classics like that, right?
I love that series.
But they're broken down so well, distilled to like just those few defining qualities of the story that the adults that read it know exactly what the significance is of the pictures, but yet we're bringing in like a counting element or a shape element or something that works really, really well. I mean, I think that's it. You're seeing people, as you are in children's publishing at all levels, approach the medium with much more sophistication. And because those books are selling, it's creating a greater need for those sophisticated board books and new content. I'm glad to hear that you're sharing that there's good sales.
Oh yes, no, totally. If anything, that currently Humor Cupcake is my best selling book. So that book itself has enabled me to keep doing books, which is wonderful in itself. So.
And Joyce, it's kind of meta then, because I can picture you holding the book, hugging it, saying, "You are my cupcake. You're my baby, little book. You're my sweetie pie."
These books are our babies, aren't they?
They are, aren't they? I hear that all the time, and I also hear that adage of, "I can't ever pick my favorite because they're all my favorite, and you write them all for certain reasons."
That's not true, is it?
But, yeah, right. I can pick my. Let me tell you, as a teacher of 850, I can tell you who my favorites are. but I, in all seriousness, I'm glad to get to meet you and know that here is a person working in board books, not exclusively, but in writing for that audience. I don't want to say because you have this calling that there need to be good board books out there and you're taking up that charge, but just rather that this is, you know, your audience, you know, that this is the right audience and this is the right format for this audience. And so to be able to tell a story in, what is it, like 14 pages that can be read, you know, just through looking at the pictures from our youngest readers to, you know, I have a 4.5-year-old, so now he's reading to my 1-week-old. That was actually a special moment that we had just 2 nights ago, is that my son read his first books, and they were the Brown Bear. We got a set of Brown Bear, Panda Bear, and Polar Bear. But to see him read to her and to have them be the right size for him to hold, read to her.
No, and that's like, why I love board books so much, because that's really where it all starts, you know? That's where, like, those are the books that we remember that we, you know, that our first books, you know, that we were able to read by ourselves. And that those books are the ones that ignite our, you know, our love of reading. And those are the books that don't get, you know, torn apart because they're board books.
They're inexpensive and they're made to hold up. So you don't feel bad.
They're like chew toys, you know?
You don't feel bad when they do get chewed on, because it's like, I didn't pay, you know, $19.95 for this book. It's made for you to love and love hard. Yeah. Joyce, it's so nice to have gotten to meet you. I, just so you know, having this conversation now, I am now thinking of you synonymously with all these warm, fuzzy feelings of "you are my cupcake" and your phrase, your cute, chubby, adorable animals.
Yes.
you are, Joyce, the art that you create, which is such a good thing that you're so true to your readers and to your audience in the way that you just kind of put love down on the page. So I'm really thankful that I had a chance to get to know you more on that level. Thank you for being so generous and sharing that tonight.
Oh, good. I mean, it was a pleasure. You know, I felt like I already know you, you know, from listening to your podcast. It's like my nighttime companion when I'm working into the wee hours of the night.
There is nothing better for me than knowing that these conversations with your colleagues are keeping people such as yourself company while you create art. I feel like that is the coolest thing, to know that you're spending time in art and with your friends creating new art. Everyone's just kind of inspiring one another and lifting each other up, and it's wonderful. So,
and thank you, Matthew, for, you know, having this podcast and, you know, allowing us to all get a glimpse into the worlds and the lives of you know, some of the best writers and illustrators of our time, really.
I'm a fan. I just am so thankful.
I'm a fan too, actually. I'm a big fan.
Right? I'm thankful that I just get to have a platform where I get to be a fan of you, be a fan of my guests, and just have a good time talking about how much we not only love your books, but also getting to know you. because when you make that connection, I'm positive you've had this experience then, when you make that connection with the author, with the illustrator, it takes your love and appreciation of that book, of that art in a 32-page or 14-page bound form, it takes it to another level. And it's that's a really special thing to make these deeper connections. So there that is. We'll keep it going, keep the podcast going, keep the chats going, hey. And it's all good. Hey, before I let you go, so you listen, so you know that this is coming. But before I let you go, it's time to talk about your friends and some kickball. So I am organizing, maybe perhaps really, if I can take a moment away from the newborn, but I'm organizing an all-star kid-lit dream team kickball tournament. And Joyce, I would love to know who you would want on your team, alive or past, from the kid-lit world, and why.
Well, I was thinking about this, and I couldn't decide. I narrowed it down to three. I'm like, I want everybody. No, I narrowed it down to three, and my three are basically Eric Carl, James Marshall, and Richard Scarry. Eric Carl, because I think for his ingenuity, he'd probably help us figure out a new and different way to kick the ball. James Marshall, because he would make us all laugh while we're losing, probably. And then Richard Scarry would make sure that everyone was having fun, you know.
Yeah. Have you gotten to meet Eric Carl?
I have met him, and I was all tongue tied. I couldn't even talk when I met him.
Yeah. I ask because you live north, further north than I do, so you're closer to the museum than I am. But I still have, and we rehashed this when my son started watching Mr. Rogers on Netflix or Hulu or whatever. But I still have that memory of Mr. Rogers going to meet Eric Carle and seeing inside the studio and painting the paper. And it's something that I think about a lot. And so to get to talk to people who have gotten to meet him,
yeah,
is just...
Oh, such a sweet man. I met him at the Society of Illustrators when he was winning. He won a Lifetime Achievement Award one year during their original art show. And so that was so wonderful to see, too. And that his book, The Hungry Caterpillar, it's like one of my all-time favorites. So
it's amazing. It's amazing. Yeah, all three of the gentlemen you mentioned, I think, are influential in many, many, many of our lives, not just you being an illustrator or you being an author, but also just parents, readers, teachers. I think that those are stories that have stuck with a good number of people for a really good reason. So, you keep good company, Joyce. It was awesome to talk to you tonight.
Yeah, great to talk to you, too.
I do look forward, seriously, to meeting you in real life, sometime this year, because we're close-ish, and asking you for a sticker from your purse.
Oh, great.
But
maybe
before
I'll
that...
send you some.
That's not as fun. Well, you could send me some, granted. But that's not as fun. I love the idea of, like finding you, just finding you in the wild, getting stickers. It reminds me of Drew Daywalt posting. Have you seen that he's posting these lost remote, lost dog, lost whatever posters? And they're all like posters of his art that he's signing, but they appear to be like, it's just like sound art.
That's
it's just
so
cool.
Fun.
Love it. And I'm excited to celebrate your release of The Whale in My Swimming Pool. Joyce, you wrote a fantastic book here. I know it's going to connect with a lot of people, and I can't wait to hear all about your journey, not just to Books of Wonder, but to all of these other schools and all the events and visits you'll have in the way that this is going to connect with kids, because I know it will, because it connected with me and with my students and with my child. So I know that you're off continuing the great work that you're doing, and I couldn't be happier for you.
Oh, thank you so much.
Like what you hear? I'd love to hear your thoughts. Leave a comment on the blog at lgbpodcast.blogspot.com or rate Let's Get Busy on iTunes through stars or reviews. Doing so not only gives me helpful feedback, it also helps to bring new listeners to the podcast, and that's a very good thing. Thank you.
We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.